Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I am thrilled that you are here and that we get to hold this space for each other as we dive into this material and strengthen it in our minds. And yeah, as always, I'm so grateful for all of you. So let's begin as we usually do with taking a few minutes to be together in silence. So if you are able, allowing yourself to close your eyes. And dropping into our body. Let's actually, for a few moments, feel your feet touching the floor or whatever they come into contact with, your shoes, socks. Feeling your legs, however they're positioned. Feeling whatever you're sitting on, maybe your sits bones, sensing that part of your body. Your torso, your arms, neck and head. We often disconnect from the body and spend a lot of time up in our heads. And in some instances, A Course in Miracles can take us up into our heads. And yet it's through really learning this, knowing what we're learning, this experiential learning, it all happens through the body. Guidance comes often through the body. It's not something we need to detach from or dissociate from, but being fully embodied while handing it all over to the Holy Spirit is a way that we open up any communication channels that we have available to us. And in even just focusing on the body, if you noticed any thoughts or judgments about the body, either positive or negative, noticing those and handing those over to Holy Spirit. Our bodies are wholly neutral. We can be fully in them as we learn that we are not of them. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice, mindful, and deep breath in. Really connecting with this breath in your body. So feeling your lungs expand and even relaxing your abdominal muscles to feel your belly soften. And exhaling and taking another nice, deep breath in and out. Allowing your eyes to open and coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Again, thank you everyone for being here. Everyone who is here but not on camera, I see you, I feel you. Thank you for being here. We are going to probably read two cameos tonight. And we're going to start with cameo number 22. This is called The Return of His Will. It's on page 1814 in the CE edition. So go ahead and find your place. And if anybody's tuning in who doesn't have the CE, feel free to just kick back and allow me to read to you. All right, let's go ahead and dive in. Oh, I just realized something. We're not streaming on Facebook. Let me just do this really quick. I just have to hit a button that I didn't press, but I remember the record button. That's the important thing. All right. Welcome again, everyone. Let's start reading. For those of you who are tuning on Facebook, I forgot to hit a button, so our meditation is on the permanent recording through my website. So Cameo 22, The Return of His Will. Just days after the personal message given on September 13th and 14th, 1966, Helen received another one, this one for Bill. It came in the notes right after what is now section 3 of chapter 12 of the text. It's called Looking at the Cause of Fear, and is found in the special messages dated September 16th, 1966. There, it is preceded by this question. Why is W.T. William Thetford more depressed than usual? We know that Bill was experiencing depression around this time from a journal he kept during August and September of 1966. In his September 11th and September 13th entries, he mentions feeling depressed a number of times. For instance, he begins his entry for September 13th with this. Great difficulty in getting up, feeling of generalized fatigue, etc., as continuation of previous depression. Found difficulty in changing this mood state, but improved as day continued. The commentary says, though Bill is aware of feeling depressed, it is easy for us to imagine him being surprised at how Jesus, through Helen, explains that depression. So here's the guidance from Jesus. He is in a very deep sleep and much more resistant to waking than you are. The major problem with him is that his is a passive resistance, which implies a giving over of will. This always induces a state of resignation and therefore depression. Tell him that no one can resign from the sonship, since membership is not optional. He has been looking for someone to take his will away, because he thought it was the cause of his trouble. Since the Course has placed such consistent emphasis on will, and since he agrees with the emphasis, his past adjustment is threatened. That is why he could not sleep. His past came to haunt him because he is giving up the belief in ghosts. Tell him again not to be afraid of ghosts and remind him that he has no past. The return of his will is what he wants. No one can accept it but himself. So the commentary then continues. This brief message gives a novel explanation for why Bill is more depressed than usual. It begins by saying that Bill is resistant to waking, aren't we all? More so than Helen. Yet unlike Helen's upfront resistance, his resistance is passive. It does not appear to be an act of will. Rather, it seems to be a fact of his nature beyond his control. As such, he has become resigned to it. In his eyes, he is constitutionally unable to awaken, and that's that. This conclusion may be depressing, yet the whole situation is an illusion that Bill himself has erected. The root of this is that he had decided that his will, quote, was the cause of his trouble. Clearly, his will had done things in the past that he regretted, which explains the reference to being haunted by the ghosts of the past. He thus voluntarily gave his will over, pulled the plug on it. His will has offended him, and so he tried to cut it off. As a result, he now apparently has no will. And that means he seems to have no strong desire, no drive, and no real power of choice. Yet these are the very things he needs if he is to wake up and remember that he is a cherished member of the sonship. To be resigned to having no will, then, is really an attempt to resign from the sonship. Yet no one can really do this, since Jesus says, since membership is not optional. Let's pause there because we're about halfway through. So Bill's depressed. He's a human being just like the rest of us. And it sounds like Bill has some awareness that this has to do with his will. But what strikes me about, I mean, the biggest thing that I take away from what we've read so far is that I love how it says, no one can resign from the sonship. Where did it go? Where's the original? I'm just looking for when Jesus originally, tell him no one can resign from the sonship since membership is not optional. I love that because it just is such a reminder that no matter what we do, no matter what path we feel like we've gone down, no matter how many errors we think we've made, no one can resign from the sonship. Membership is not optional. We are all part of the sonship and we can't not be that. We can dissociate from it and think we're not part of it, but we can't not be part of the sonship. So what is being described here with Bill's like having this sort of passive resistance? What came up for me when I was reading this was that I immediately thought, I don't like animal studies, but I think about the experiments. If anybody's familiar with the work of Martin Seligman, who's a psychologist who is considered, I think, the founder of positive psychology, he coined this term called learned helplessness to describe what happens when dogs are in cages and the floor of the cage becomes electrified. If the dog can escape to a side that's not electrified, that dog's mood is fine. If the dog can't escape and it's just continually subjected to those electric shocks, it gives up. It just stops moving. It just receives those shocks no matter what. And even when the safe zone is offered to the dog won't move because it's in this state of helplessness, and people will have to actually go and like retrain the dog and show it that it can be safe again. And then that's when it perks up and comes out of it. So that reminds me just about this idea of will, that when we resign and sort of give up because we think that our will is just screwing things up, we're making all the wrong choices, that, you know, we can't get it right. There's this sort of like hands up, oh, well, I'm just going to kind of give up and resign myself to this. And yet, as it says, we can't resign from the sonship. We still have that power to choose again in every single moment. So having said that, I'm wondering if anybody has any comments or questions so far, anything that's come up for you, any sentences that stand out?
Karen.
Uma then Dave.
Hey.
Hi.
So yeah, that example that you just shared in particular with the animal study, mm-hmm. And the learned helplessness, this is so interesting because the issue of powerlessness is very sort of prominent in my mind this week, because I'm in Austin in Texas.
Oh, wow.
And I've been thinking a lot about that word power, you know, like we have power, we don't have power because electricity has been such an issue for us. Mm-hmm. And so I've been feeling very sort of helpless, you know, all through the week, like wondering if the heat's going to go off at any second. And so I've just been like one of the lessons I've been practicing all week is that miracles are seen in light. And there's a line in that says, I am not helpless, but powerful. Mm. And so I just, this like the last like 10 days has been such a study in that, like this whole dancing with this idea of being helpless and being powerless and stuff. And I'm not sure how it happened, but I never lost power. Like almost everyone I know lost power or water or both. And didn't end up losing power even for a second, or water or internet or anything. And so, but it's still been really terrifying just because it's like, for me, cold stress is my biggest stress because I deal with a chronic illness where cold, it triggers the symptoms. Mm-hmm. So like just been, and there's nothing else to do. So it's just been like sitting with your thoughts for like 7 straight days, just trying to work with this concept of helplessness versus, you know, being powerful. So I thought this was a really interesting cameo that came up.
Timing wise. Yeah. Right. that this would be what you've been dealing with and that we'd be reading about this tonight. So that's, wow, Uma, yeah, it's no joke what's been happening in Texas, and to be, it's no joke to like be with your thoughts, like just yourself for seven whole days. Like that's no joke, let alone, you know, everything else going on.
Yeah. It's been like being in a bunker just because there's not a lot you can do. And so, but yeah, it's been really fascinating. And like right before all the, like the blackout started, I needed to get like a couple of prescriptions from a pharmacy, and I just like, I wasn't feeling well. I was having, my viral symptoms were kicking up, and I just thought, I'm just going to post this in my apartment complex. We have like a community board. You can log in and post stuff there. Mm-hmm. And I gave this whole thing over to Holy Spirit. I was like, I don't want to have to go out into the ice and the night and the cold to get these medications, but maybe somebody's going to the same pharmacy and they'd be willing to like pick up these medicines or whatever. But I wasn't holding my breath. Mm-hmm. But I was like, hey, if anyone's going to Peoples, like, I'm happy to pay you like $10 to just like pick up these medications and drop them off. And like that night I got a text from someone who was just like, hey, I'm happy to go get them, you know? And like, what's the address of the pharmacy? And I was like, oh, this is so sweet that this person, you know, is doing this. And so it just, they were like, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to pay me or anything. And then I got like 8 more texts, you know, in the next like hour or two, where people were just like, hey, did you end up getting your medications? You know, I'd love to like go get these for you or whatever. So I just had that experience of like being on the receiving end of all these expressions of love and feeling very sort of taken care of by all these strangers, like people who I've never met before, who were just like, hey, we'll, you know, go out into the ice to like get something for someone we've never met before, you know? So I just gave the whole like electricity and power thing over the Holy Spirit. Every time like fear came up around it, I was just like, here you go, here you go, here you go. And yeah, so it was just an exercise and giving it over.
Wow, Uma. I'm just struck by that too, because you're just making me think each time that I've been in some sort of, you know, be it hurricane, like Hurricane Sandy when that hit, COVID, I mean, you name it, we can start to go down a list. It shakes up our usual sense of safety. Like any roots that we put into the world, any place we try to plant our safety here, the rug at some point gets yanked, you know, and then suddenly we find ourselves and our usual sense of safety is gone. Okay. So then number one, let me look at where I thought my safety was. I thought it was in, you know, having electricity and having, you know, easy access to, you know, whatever it is that I need. I thought my safety was in all these things. Maybe I'm still feeling rattled about not having those things. And yet that work with what you're doing, like handing it over, continuing to talk to the Holy Spirit is everything, because that's where our safety is. And it's in these challenging moments that like, it's like our learning goes on hyperspeed. You know, we start really learning because we have to, because there's no other comfort net to just suddenly, you know, make it easy. So, wow. It sounds like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. There's no other option. So you have to give it over.
You have to trust. Exactly. Yeah. You have to trust. And how beautiful, like that's just, that always touches me. Like when we're faced with some kind of community challenge, how we can come together and help one another, and how that is where our happiness lies, you know, in those expressions of love. Those strangers might not call those miracles like extensions of love because they're not course students, but they know that, I mean, it's known as the helper's high, like the altruism. Yeah. When we do good deeds for another person, it feels good. It feels good to help and to serve. And that it like, gosh, the world has quite an interesting way of bringing us back to that, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the funny thing is, since I was getting so many texts, I just went to delete the post off of the board, mm-hmm. you know, because people kept texting to say, hey, do you need help? And so I just, you know, I'd reply to them, but I deleted the post. And Corinne, like for hours after I deleted the post, even the next day, I continued to get texts from people saying, aww, hey, can we go out and get this for you? And I was like, where are they seeing the post? Because it has like long gone, but there was still all these expressions of love coming through. So yeah, it was cool.
That's gorgeous, Uma. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's again, so helpful to hear your learning. And, you know, when each of us shares, we learn from each other. And it's a reminder to me that even though I'm not in Texas and I'm in my, you know, my comfy home at the moment, that, wait a second, where am I placing? Where was my safety today? You know, where did I think my roots were today? And it's just that constant reminder and that beauty that we have of learning from one another. So thank you. Thank you so much. Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to add maybe one thing to that, pardon me, learned helplessness thing. Mm-hmm. See, recently I've been kind of coming up against a big ego brick wall, and it's been there for a while. And, you know, I found myself many times struggling against it rather than asking for help. And sometimes when you get to a point where you can't, you feel like you can't hear Holy Spirit's voice, you just kind of, well, I'll speak for myself. I just kind of try to get through it however I can and rely on my own resources, which are not a lot sometimes. But anyway, something I noticed was that the other day I just kind of gave up, and I felt kind of depressed about it. But at that point, what happened was, with my ego shut up, it's kind of like Holy Spirit's voice was able to come in the back door then, mm-hmm. You know, and I started hearing, this encouragement and this, messages that gave me hope and the sense that Spirit was still there. And so, sometimes it, well, not that I want to say depression is a good thing or hopelessness is a good thing, but sometimes when we give up, you know, we just, you know, say, you know, the steering wheel does not work. Every time I'm trying to control things, it's just falling apart. Being in a place where we just stop trying to grab the wheel is not necessarily bad. Mm-hmm. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Dave. I love how you said that, and that I really resonate and relate to the steering wheel, because, you know, I always felt like when I take the steering wheel, I drive the ship into the ground. It doesn't go so well. And so that moment that we're like, all right, I give up, Spirit's like, thank you. Like, now let me like start whispering so you can hear, like, thank you for giving up and for being willing to not do it your way, you know, anymore. So, so I really relate to that. And just one other thing too, that I wanted to say, I mean, that giving up can be beautiful again, because we're like, all right, the wall's here, whatever. But the giving up can also, or maybe another way of saying it is when we can accept that the wall is here right now, we're no longer like fighting it. And that's, I'm just sharing this based on my own experience with anxiety, that when I would be hating it, when I'd be like, I hate that I'm feeling this way again. I don't like that the same, you know, trigger is coming back around. And like, I'm feeling like I'm in the same state again. When I'd come at it with that energy, like, oh, this thing is here again. And I'm mad. It just made it feel even more impenetrable. It made it feel more solid. It made it feel more immovable. And then when I finally was like, you know what? I fully accept that I'm completely triggered right now. I fully accept that I'm here seemingly yet again. I fully accept that like trials are lessons, like, you know, it's coming around again. That shift of energy into acceptance rather than resistance.
Yeah.
It's then as if it's like, oh, there's no wall here. Like it's another learning opportunity rather than like a solid immovable wall. It's just a learning opportunity then, instead of something that seems like impassable.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for that.
Appreciate that.
Corinne.
Yeah.
I'll just add something to this, because this is usually, I usually have to be in that frame of mind, like Dave was talking about, before I reach out to the Holy Spirit and start to get some guidance. But this week, I think it was the day before yesterday, the workbook lesson was God's Voice Speaks to Me Throughout the Day. And I was I've read it 100 times, but for some reason, it just seemed intriguing to me. And it suggests that you do 4 practice periods for like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to do that. I got insight into a problem that has been driving me crazy. I think that the thing I'm trying to say here is, it doesn't have to be so difficult. You know, it was as simple as sitting down, being quiet, and taking that 5 minutes and just asking, all right, if your voice speaks to me all day, what do you have to say about this situation? And I was absolutely, it didn't happen immediately, but within a minute or two, when I just let it go, I was so delighted.
I mean, just like show of hands for those of us who are on the screen, has anybody had that experience that Paul is describing, or at least this is now my words, like you're trying to figure something out, you're dealing with it. And then like you sit down and close your eyes and like listen to a meditation, get quiet. And suddenly it's as if like you're a completely different person. Like things are totally.
Everybody's got their hands up.
It's amazing how much that pause can make such a huge difference. Pastor Yolanda Batts, who I'm co-teaching the Loved Ones with, calls it taking a spiritual pause. And I love that. It's just a matter of having an interruption. You know, when we are getting spun off in whatever our thing is, whatever we're dealing with, again, referencing my own anxiety pattern, if you're spinning off, it's like you need an interruption. And that interruption at times can be pausing and listening to a meditation, pausing and getting quiet. It might have to be something else depending on, you know, what's coming up, but it's that interruption with that, you know, or that Charlie Brown, wah, wah, wah voice that we all have in our minds, and letting something else come through. Thank you, Paula. Steve.
Sorry, wrong one.
There you go.
That is so cool. Can I put a plug in for something that that fell into my mind?
Of course.
Probably a year and a half ago. It was, you know, my history takes me back into, you know, going to AA, and, you know, I'm a regular there trying to help, you know, my fellow alcoholics. But at the end of every meeting, we do a moment of silence for the alcoholics still suffering in and out of the rooms, right? Well, about a year and a half or so ago, well, it would be a year ago, August, this idea falls into my head that if everybody could just take a moment and pause, like for pause for the cause, whatever that cause may be, and it's like, you know, only a few seconds, right? And so I kind of pulled this thing together last year, and, you know, it was more of an education for myself on how to maybe attempt to do something. Mm-hmm. But tomorrow marks the 1 year anniversary of Pause for the Cause, which would be February 22nd at 22:22 GMT time for 22 seconds. Just take that pause and reflect inside of, you know, a peaceful moment or your happy place or something like that.
Steve, and it just kind I of, love this.
You know, and it's like I threw it out on Facebook, and I threw it into this other network that I'm involved in, and there's, you know, some kind of response. But I thought, oh my gosh, you know, if 22 million people on this planet all paused at the same time just to take that Holy Spirit instant breath, holy cow, you know, what could we change in the world without changing anything,
right?
Other than taking that pause,
right? That's awesome. So, I love that's so divinely inspired. So tomorrow.
I tell you, but the whole process, you know, my ego would get involved. I want this. I want that. I want to see this happen. And it's like just having to back out. And so I made up a meme thing that I'm going to throw out on Facebook again tomorrow, just as a reminder. And
yay.
You know, and I don't know. I'll send a copy of it to you via email.
Please, I'll share it for sure. That's awesome.
Okay.
That's awesome. I love it.
And so, I will be pausing. And then it let it culminate next year in 2022. What mm-hmm. the heck could happen then? I don't know where number 22 came from, but it sure fits.
It sure does. It sure does. That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Can I just share something about the number 22?
Yeah.
In angel numerology, the number 22 is about faith. It's all about having faith. Mm. So it just gives me chills that's, yeah. that's the date that you decided. Yeah.
So. Wow. That's cool. Thank you for that, Deidre.
You're welcome.
You know, I have to say that I have been like hardcore Course in Miracles all the way for years. And even though the course references angels in the beginning for many years, I've said this, Deidre and I have talked about this before, like in the beginning, I was like, angels, yeah, whatever. Like just like focusing on the course. My mind, open-mindedness. We were actually talking about this in some of the Love Lens conversations, maybe offline. I don't remember that we actually said this out loud, but open-mindedness is a characteristic of God's teachers. So we all have to, even if we're like hardcore course, we still have to have that like open mind to recognizing that we don't know what we don't know. And there've just been such interesting things that I've experienced recently surrounding angels and numbers. Anyway, this is a recommendation for a show on Netflix called Connected. And I believe it's episodes. I think there's only one season. And I'm pretty sure it's episode 4. It's called Digits. So it's on Netflix. It's called Connected is the show. And the episode is called Digits. And it talks about this. I don't even know how to sum this up briefly. I'm going to try. It talks about in the beginning, there's this pattern that the IRS can use to tell whether or not somebody is lying on their tax return, because there's a specific pattern that most tax returns look like. And as this journalist investigates more, he finds out that this pattern, it's called Benford's Law, if I remember correctly. Basically, if you have a list of numbers and you block out every number but the first number, so you only see the first numbers, it'll always be like 30% ones. And then like it goes down from there. It's a curve where like it's always the most, the number one appears the most frequently and then the curve goes down. This pattern applies not only to tax returns, it applies in sports in terms of like goals attempted in soccer. It applies to like, if they analyze thousands of social media accounts, it applies to followers. It applies to music, the rhythm of music and what music we like. It follows the same kind of pattern. If you like, I guess, ascribe the music notes to different numbers. It's over my head. I'm not intelligent enough to fully understand it, but it speaks to the fact that we are marching to the beat of a drummer that we do not see. There's like this rhythm in the universe and we're all, you know, following the beat of this drummer. And it's like eerie, just the way that, I mean, the journalist is kind of like, ah, this is so strange. Like I thought I had free will. And yet like, you're telling me that I'm kind of always fitting in with a pattern. When they analyzed the social media accounts, they all fit this pattern, except the ones that didn't fit the pattern ended up being Russian bots that were like, you know, kind of doing their own thing, trying to like manipulate people. So anyway, this is an amazing series. Benford's Law will blow your mind. Wendy, thank you. I agree. And Steve, your numbers, and Deidre, you saying that just got me on this tangent. So thank you for humoring me. But if you check it out, you're going to be as blown away as I am, because it just made me feel like we are all marching to the beat of a universal rhythm that we don't see, we don't perceive, and yet there's evidence that it is showing up. So numbers are cool is my point. Thank you for letting me go on that tangent. I seriously love that episode. I was like falling over. I was so blown away. All right, let's keep reading. We might only read one cameo tonight. We'll see. Okay, so back to depression. We're at the bottom of page 1815, and we're at the paragraph rather than face awakening. Rather than face awakening, Bill has settled for this depressing state of affairs. This is the bargain he has made to maintain his equilibrium. And this brings us to why he is more depressed now than usual. The reason is that the Course has been trying to shake him out of this. And this is a quote, the Course has placed such consistent emphasis on will. Moreover, Bill agrees with the emphasis. Thus, the alive and active will that Bill has put to sleep is at last beginning to rise from its chains. The result is inevitable. His past adjustment is threatened. He is not just depressed, but also deeply unsettled, so much so that he, quote, could not sleep. In Bill's journal on September 15th, the day before this guidance came, he actually mentions having trouble sleeping. So this is from Bill's journal. I did not sleep particularly soundly during the night. A vague awareness from time to time that a great deal of unconscious material was being stirred up. Perhaps this deals with the beginning release of repression. Bill senses, in other words, that material he has pushed down in his unconscious is now rising to the surface, perhaps because his work with the Course is bringing about the beginning release of repression. In his message through Helen, Jesus agrees with this and makes it more specific. What is surfacing in Bill is specifically his will's past misdeeds. Now that his will is rising from the grave, the ghosts of his past quote-unquote sins are rising with it, coming back to haunt him, so that his sleep is now disturbed by a restless conscience. This is similar to what we see in the Shield Report, Cameo 5, where, when Esther finally hears that she is forgiven, quote, she will be afraid for a long time because she will remember many things, i.e. many loveless acts of hers, consciously or unconsciously. Now we can better understand why Bill believes that it is safer to keep his will locked in the vault. And yet there is literally no need to. He has no reason to be afraid of the misdeeds of the past because, quote, he has no past. His will is not the source of trouble that he fears it is. Rather, the return of his will is what he wants. He can welcome his will back with joy because once it is truly unchained, its gentle strength will carry him to the only place he has ever wanted to be, home. Beautiful.
Corinne.
Yes.
This is the second reference to he has no past. Is that because the past is gone?
Yes, and when I was reading that, what flashed through my mind that I was simultaneously trying to remember was the guidance that Jesus gave Helen in one of the very first cameos that we read, and it was about canceling her past. Like, does anybody remember this? It was about, like, she can be joyous because all of her sins, all of her anything has been canceled. I think it had the word canceled in it. Is that making...
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I can't remember the exact words.
No, I can't either.
If anybody knows it, please feel free to chime in. But that's it. Jesus has... I'm just glancing just to see if it shows up. Jesus has forgiven it. Like, here it is. I found it. Jesus says to Helen, I told you I forgave you, and that meant all hurt and hate you have ever expressed is canceled. It's on page 1702, if anybody wants to review that. All hurt and hate you have ever expressed is canceled. So it's canceled. All those past loveless things that we've thought or that we've done or whatever, it's all been canceled. But we, rather than recognize that, what we tend to do is just brush it under the rug. So that's this idea of repression. We stuff it down. We don't want to think about what we did back then. So I'm just going to push that out of consciousness. I'm going to shove it under the rug. And that doesn't lead to us recognizing that it's been canceled. Instead, we have to, like, look at it. Like, this is what I did. This is what I thought. It was not pretty. And I'm going to hand it over to Holy Spirit so I can learn that it's been canceled. Rather than let it fester under the carpet.
This is tricky because this applies to all of us, but it's tricky because you have a situation like we had on January 6th, And it applies to that also. Mm-hmm. And coming to terms with just kind of letting that go can be kind of scary.
Well, remember too, Jesus, all hurt and hate has been canceled by him. We're in.
Oh, good point.
You know, like we're here seeing through perception. I'm seeing through my ego. I'm seeing through, you know, I'm in my right mind or my wrong mind, but it's still unreal. It's still in this realm of form. And it's something beyond our thought system that needs to come through us to show us the truth. It's not of me alone. So can I, of Corinne, look at what happened then, or look at, you know, any other number of horrors of the world and like be okay with it? No, but I'm willing to let Holy Spirit show me the truth.
Oh, you're so good at this, Corinne.
No, I don't know about that.
Thank you. You are so good at this.
Don't. No.
No, thank you very much.
No pedestals here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. No, it's a great point. Andrea.
It's so cool that Paula just mentioned January 6th, because this morning when I was doing my Course in Miracles review, today is a review day in the calendar, and January 6th came to mind for me because I was reviewing the part about my thoughts have no meaning. And I came to the part about, I thought of January 6th and I thought to myself, or maybe, you know, Jesus or Spirit was speaking through me, and I thought of all the people who, you know, quote unquote, perpetrated January 6th. And I was thinking, oh, wow, that's just a bunch of people who are in need of love, who are in need of expressions of love, and who are desperate for love. It's like, it's an opportunity for me as an observer to send love to those people, because that's what their soul is made out of, but yearning for, you know, regardless of the physical world actions that got taken. I was like,
yeah.
I don't know that I'm really totally capable of that yet, but it was a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Andrea, you just reminded me too, I had watched a news clip, and I don't remember the man's name, but he was a neo-Nazi, you know, self-declared white supremacist, went to, you know, all these rallies and like all this white supremacist stuff. I don't remember if he was a Nazi first or I don't remember. Anyway, white supremacist. There was a woman, a Muslim woman who was a journalist who was doing a documentary on white supremacy. And she was interviewing, you know, some of the people at these gatherings, and she got to interviewing him. And she treated him, it was like a really hot day, and they were at this white supremacist rally, and she was like, do you need a glass of water? And like brought him a glass of water. And he was so touched by her kindness that like they kept the dialogue going. And, you know, she'd ask him questions about being a white supremacist for this film, which the film is published. You can watch it. He has since that time completely recognized his errors and like now belongs to a Black church, has, you know, like the turning point for him was when he said, I don't have any, you know, or he said, I think I consider you a friend. And she's like, what does that mean? Like, I'm a Muslim woman and you're now considering me a friend. And he had this moment of like, you know, does not compute, and had to recognize how his belief system was not matching up with what this woman was expressing to him. So it just speaks to, again, the power of kindness and the power of love, that when we meet that hateful energy with more hate, no matter what, even if it's like Democrat, Republican, like, you know, no matter what, if we're meeting judgment with more judgment, we're just going to be deadlocked and nothing's going to shift. And it's about somebody in that dyad or group or whatever being willing to come back to love. It doesn't mean we have to condone or be okay with what the other person is doing or saying, but that we can still ask Holy Spirit to see for us and connect in that deeper place.
Yeah, I especially love that part because I've been really getting into the whole idea that our physical bodies are meant to be communication devices to extend love. Mm-hmm. Like that's here to do. And then so to see January 6th is, wow, that's a just a whole bunch of people to be extending some love to. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I love how you just said that. And I believe it's completely true that our physical bodies are a device to extend love. That's it. And if we're not extending that love, if we're preoccupied with our small self, it's because, you know, whatever our lessons are coming up and we have to deal with them. But ultimately, even if we're dealing with something, another sort of interruption, another way of breaking the pattern of whatever it is we might be obsessing about or worrying about, is to be kind. Like Uma just described before, those the strangers being like, hey, I'll help you. You know, I don't know you, but I'm going to help you. And just there's so much power in that. So I believe that that's what we're here to do, is extend life.
And to bring it back to Bill in this cameo is like, that's what the will is meant for, is to,
yeah,
to extend that love.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And when we think that will has done bad things, we have to recognize, you know, in the past, we have to recognize that that is just a small self will. It's not our true will. And that all hate and hurt has been canceled. That we are forgiven. Thank you for that, Andrea. John, jazz hands. I saw that. Oh, beautiful. Now, here's an interesting thing. We have 11 minutes, and this next cameo is a page and like 3/4. Should we chat or should we read? Anybody have anything you want to chat about? I'll start there. Let's go for it. What are we going to say, Paula? Go for it.
Yeah, keep going, because everything seems to be tying in together tonight.
Let's go for it. I'll just read the whole thing. Thank you, Paula. Okay, so this is cameo 23, the savage problem of personal rejection. There's a brief message to Helen in the special messages, the numbering of which corresponds to what is now the end of chapter 14, section 7 of the text, called the Circle of Atonement. It is dated November 15th, 1966, and reads as follows. Special note for H.S., Helen Schuckman. Bill was right in not regarding this as a separate problem, the savage problem of personal rejection. There is no fear in perfect love. You do not want him to feel guiltless, but rejected. This area is the only one in which you want to retain this, but you will not be able to limit it. You will not see his purity until you give up retaliation as a weapon against him or against everyone else. You think these are the only alternatives. Be sure to consider why you want to maintain this position. Bill will help you with this. The commentary continues. So that's that's the only guidance we're going to read. So the rest is commentary. We don't know the context for this, but apparently Helen is behaving unkindly toward Bill. Bill has said or done something, and in retaliation, Helen is sending him a pointed message of rejection. She wants the message to go in, to pierce his defenses, and plant itself in his heart. She wants him to know that he is being rejected because he has sinned. It sounds ugly. And Jesus clearly wants Helen to face the ugliness of it, calling it savage. And there is something else, something even more challenging, that Jesus asks her to face. This, indeed, is the main point of his message, a point that is embedded in nearly every sentence. Helen, he says, wants to carefully limit this ugliness. She wants to build a little pen around the savage beast and say, this savagery is something I do only here and nowhere else. I don't do this to Bill in other areas. In fact, I love Bill, and I certainly don't do this to other people. I have to let my inner beast out to feed somewhere, and it's much safer to let it loose on Bill in response to particular behaviors than to let it run wild in all my relationships. What Jesus wants her to face is that, however much she believes she has successfully corralled this beast, she has not and cannot His opening line speaks of not regarding this as a separate problem. Rather, in this seemingly limited problem of how she treats Bill in certain instances, lies the whole problem of personal rejection, which is at the heart of the separation. As he says in chapter 6, the separation is the notion of rejection. While she hangs on to this beast, no matter how small it looks, she hangs on to separation itself. I want to read that one more time. While she hangs on to this beast, no matter how small it looks, she hangs on to separation itself. Therefore, even though Helen has apparently narrowed this sort of retaliation down to this one area, and in quotes, this area is the only one in which you want to retain this, the fact remains that it infects everything. And in parentheses, in quotes, but you will not be able to limit it. The implication is that it taints all of her relationships. And in particular, it makes her unable to really love Bill. After all, she cannot love him and reject him. Only when she has given up this weapon completely will she see his purity. Only then will she truly love him. Perfect love does not tell someone to fear the day that his sins will catch up with him. Helen might quite naturally respond, "Well, if I don't use this sword on Bill, then where will I use it?" Jesus's message amounts to the following question. What is your reasoning for thinking you have to use it at all? This question is so important that Jesus asks her to reflect on it. Be sure to consider why you want to maintain this position, why she wants to believe that her only choice is to use it on Bill or use it on others. Jesus apparently expects her to find a motive that is so unsightly, so against her conscious ideals, that she will drop the sword as if it were a slimy serpent. This self-reflection, considering why she wants to keep this weapon, is so important that she is supposed to let Bill help her with it. Being on the receiving end of the weapon, he may have special insight into why she is so attached to it. As a result, her search now embodies the very egolessness that is its goal. For now, the very one cut down by her sword has become the therapist who can help her let it go. So, just to kind of pick up on this ending point here, when we are in judgment, I'm going to say this point first because I don't want to lose it. When we're in judgment, we have to think, why do we want to keep it? That's like a really powerful follow-up question. If we're feeling like, you know, we're not ready to forgive somebody, we're not ready to see something differently, a great question to ask is, why do we want to keep this? Why do we want to keep this perspective? You know, why do we want to keep it going? And if we're honest, maybe it's because we do want to keep the separation going. We do want to, to personally reject, like it says in the beginning here, to make somebody feel, where was it, about guilt, and just feel that rejection. We have to look at this. So this is where, as it's saying, to not just like say that we have this little problem of judgment or condemnation or anger or whatever it may be, we can't just say, oh, it's just that little problem over here. If it's over here, it's probably everywhere. And we, you know, whatever, to whatever degree we might notice it or not, but it's important. It goes back to, I feel like, our conversation last week with just the importance of owning the shadow side, of owning our attack thoughts, of owning our judgments, of owning it all, and being not afraid to look at it and not afraid to own it. Because as I shared last time, this is going to stay with me forever. Freedom Cartwright, her first meditation teacher, Stephen Levine, said that the happiest people he knows are the people who have spent the most time looking at their darkness. So meaning, you know, looking at their judgments, looking at owning the ugliness of the ego that is in our minds. And it's, you know, not all, I think this is my caption for last week's video. It's not all unicorns and rainbows with A Course in Miracles. It's about looking at the hard stuff too, but looking with the Holy Spirit, and we're not looking to increase guilt in ourselves or in others. We're looking to forgive, to give to the Holy Spirit, to heal, to transform. I think that's all I have to say. Comments or questions? Nice short cameo. Mm. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I unmuted prematurely here. that Benford's Law thing that you were talking about, I've seen that. And if people have Netflix, it's really worth checking that out, because it really does blow your mind.
I was just in a dramatic mood that night, and I was like, oh, I was literally like falling down on my couch with my mind blown with how many things that we do fit this pattern. So thank you for that shout out for that, Dave. I hope everybody can watch it too. It's really good. I'm glad you've seen it. It gave me a lot of comfort too, that if there's this like pattern that we're following and we don't see it, but it's like pointing to something, that there is something greater, you know, at work than what we can perceive. Thank you, Dave. Nikki, so the Netflix show is called Connected, and it's the episode, I think it's episode 4, if I'm remembering correctly, the episode title is called Digits. So the show is Connected. The name of the episode is Digits. Anybody else, final comments or questions? Wendy.
This question is actually for Steve. What was GMP time? I couldn't find that on the web.
Greenwich Mean Time, which is for me in the Pacific, it's 8 hours ahead of us.
Okay.
So here at Pacific time, that 2200 would actually be 2:30 in the afternoon.
Okay, thank you.
So,
GMT, Greenwich Mean GMT. Time.
Oh, that's why I couldn't find it. I thought
it was... Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, Steve. Yeah, I'll definitely be doing that tomorrow. It's exciting.
Thanks, Steve.
And Corinne?
Yes.
I sent that to the info at...
Perfect.
At your email. So.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you for everything you do.
Of course. It's my pleasure. We're all in this together, and I'm grateful for each one of you and for just holding the space for sharing. For those of you on the phone, I love you all. So thank you for being here. Deep breath, lots of love, and I will see you next week.
We love you too.
Love you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.